Brief. The Justice Department's charging a Japanese translator with stealing millions from L.A. Dodger star Shohei Ohtani to pay off gambling debts. U.S. Attorney Martin Estrada.
There is no evidence to indicate that Mr. Ohtani authorized the over $16 million of transfers from his account to the bookmakers.
Ipe Mizuhara faces decades in prison. Former football star turned murder defendant O.J. Simpson died today. KNX Radio's Vicki Moore.
He had such incredible charisma. You know, whether it was civil court or criminal court, O.J. Simpson was a huge personality in the room. And he was never one to shy away from attention. He actually courted it.
He was 76 years old. And people in Slidell, Louisiana, near New Orleans, are cleaning up massive storm damage today. This man lost his home.
I mean, it hurts to see this, but it is what it is.
Dozens of homes were destroyed. CBS News Brief, I'm Monica Ricks.
James here, host of Unlabeled, your 90s mixtape, every Sunday from 8 to 9 on WFHR. It's your weekly dose of music, nostalgia, and pop culture exclusively on locally grown radio.
Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Wisconsin teachers are leaving the profession at an alarming rate. That's according to the Department of Public Instruction's workforce report for 2022. The report also says teacher pay in real dollars has dropped 20% over the past 12 years. Changes for the better at Wisconsin's youth prisons. Limits on pepper spray, restraints, and strip searches correlate with better behavior. Deputy Corrections Secretary Jared Hoy tells a state Senate committee that's not all.
Staff morale was exceptionally good overall at the time of the visit. A review of video over the reporting period showed staff regularly engaging with youth. Staff were extremely friendly.
New rules on a trial basis at Lincoln Hills and Copper Lake schools since February could become permanent this year. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News. Now here's what you need to know closer to home.
For WFHR and WIRI News, I'm Melissa Kay. May could be a loud month in Wisconsin. Here's Brittany Merlot to explain why.
Cicadas are a sound that many Midwesterners are familiar with, but trillions of them emerging at the same time? Here's what we can expect. Cicadas are, in fact, the loudest insect in the world, making a noise up to 80 decibels, which is comparable to the sound of a vacuum cleaner. And at their peak, these buzzing bugs can create noises of around 100 decibels. And that's the sound of a jumbo jet engine. People in southern Wisconsin will feel the largest impact, but it might be experienced here, too. Experts say people should only be exposed to around 100 decibels for 15 minutes before ear protection is needed. This is the first time in over 220 years both cicadas will emerge at the same time.
There's no exact date when the cicadas will appear, but experts estimate it will happen as early as mid-May. And that's what you need to know. I'm Melissa Kay, WFHR and WIRI News.
Matt and Air on Air.
So we're going to talk monarch butterflies and what we can do to help their habitat, because that's one of the biggest reasons why we're seeing our monarch population decrease. As Greg said, we know how much I loved Winged Thingas.
Winged Thingas! That's the name of our band. Calvin, me, Jane, Winged Thingas.
The Winged Thingas.
Matt and Air on Air, weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
The Brewers with another win in Cincinnati. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Despite a steady rain, the Brewers had no problem scoring runs against the Reds. Top of the first, Bally Sports, Wisconsin.
And a fly ball to deep right. That'll do it. And then some for Christian Yelich. It's gone. A two-run blast for Yelly, and he stays hot.
Wow.
The Brewers went on to win 7-2 last night over the Reds. Today's game was rained out. NBA, the Bucks without Giannis and that calf muscle injury. They played against the Orlando Magic and beat them 117-99 at Fiserv Forum. NFL, the Packers are headed to Brazil to play the Eagles. In September, I spoke to Packers president Mark Murphy.
You know, the trip to London was phenomenal. The fan support, that was pretty impressive. And I'm really, really looking forward to seeing Brazil. I think we're the most popular team in Brazil and really anxious to see the kind of support we'll get.
That's Packers president and CEO Mark Murphy. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
Mostly cloudy today with scattered showers and a thunderstorm possible as well. High temperatures will flirt with 60 degrees and winds will start to ramp up this evening and into tomorrow too, dragging our high temperatures down for Friday into the low 50s. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot. Right now it's 62 degrees.
Matt Nair on air.
So we're going to talk monarch butterflies and what we can do to help their habitat, because that's one of the biggest reasons why we're seeing our monarch population decrease. As Greg said, we know how much I loved Winged Thingas.
Winged Thingas! That's the name of our band. Calvin, me, Jane, Winged Thingas.
The Winged Thingas.
Matt Nair on air. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Friday morning on Upper North News Radio, Jim Santel will discuss the legal issues facing an ex-president whose campaign trail keeps running through courthouses.
Your hometown news talk and sports station is locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
Welcome, everyone, to Midday Magazine for this April 2nd, 2024. Have your host, James J. Mailoff, here. At 3:30, we're going to welcome in Baxter Arndt and Stephanie Lund from the Southwold County YMCA, thanks to Tri-City Services. Looking forward to talking with them. Right now, we've been looking forward to, for a while, talking with Terry Hummus, our good friend from Central Wisconsin Gift of Life. Terry, good to see you.
Yeah, great. Thank you for having me back.
It's been a while. We appreciate you joining us. We get to talk usually when this event comes around, the scavenger hunt with Gift of Life. And I'm looking forward to diving into that with you and the details of it, Terry. But if you don't mind, I'd like to take this opportunity to talk a little bit about what Central Wisconsin Gift of Life is.
Okay, so Central Wisconsin Gift of Life is a group that consists of organ and tissue recipients, living organs, or organ and tissue donor families who simply are passionate about getting the word out. The group was organized by Dr. Jill Dillon, who donated her kidney to Sarah Selinsky. She has quite the backstory to that whole process. And then Sarah's cousin Kathy got involved, and they say, hey, we need to get the word out.
Yeah.
Because a lot of things have changed even recently. You know, that happened a few years ago. A lot of things have changed even recently about, you know, you may need an organ. I may want to give you an organ. It may not be a match, but there may be a person, at another hospital that needs organs. Yeah. So there's like a organ swap situation, the whole process of tissue donation. Everything. It just really is getting really being involved.
Yeah. With the science getting better and better every day, we're able to do a lot more with this than we realized. I would say even 10 years ago, it's grown and changed so much.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. It is. I had a personal situation 21 years ago and it involved tissue an eye donation, and even at that time, it's like, what? Tissue donation? What is that used for? Well, that's used with victims who are involved in fires. They'll take a deceased person's skin and use it for grafting. And I don't think people realize all the different parts of your body that can be recycled, as we can say.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to
And that's actually the theme of our scavenger hunt is recycle yourself.
Oh, wow, year. I like that. Oh, that's good. Very creative. I like that. I want to get more into that with you in a second. I do want to encourage people to learn more about donation and more about some of the things that Terry is touching on there with the changes to that. I think that it's one of those things that I think a lot of people, the first time they think about it, one of the first times they think about it is maybe is with their driver's license. And, you know, whether they want to be an organ donor or not, putting on their driver's license. This is something that you could be thinking about a long time before that and way after you get your license. And something almost every one of us is capable of being able to do.
Oh, definitely. So when you talk about things 10 years ago, you know, they'd say, yeah, put the dot on your driver's license, you're good to go. Sometimes you may not have your driver's license with you. So if you've registered, 10 years or more ago, please go to the DMV to check to see if you actually are registered. I actually obviously 21 years ago, said, yep, I'm going to do this. Mm-hmm. Went back. No, I was not technically in their database because I've done it so long ago. Fortunately, in the situation that I was involved in, the individual had his license with him. They could see, yes, he registered as a donor. We could say, yes, we are honoring his wishes. You know, so it's always very important to let your family members know that you want to be a donor, but definitely check to make sure you are a registered donor. Another thing is driver's ed classes now require, in the state of Wisconsin, require that they have 30 minutes of class time donated just to talking about organ donation. And this was a lobbied by a parent of an individual who died young and just wanted to make sure that even, you know, unfortunate accidents happen to young people, that they are well aware that this is something they can be doing.
Yeah, life is precious. And we have the opportunity to help others with life, with our life. And I can't think of many more beautiful things in this world. It's a gift that we have for each other.
Oh, definitely.
The scavenger hunt, Terry, is one of our favorite events. We love this event. I think it's such a creative, fun idea. And you've topped yourselves because you've even come up with a better one than last year. I like this. This is a good idea. I love where you're going with this. Can we tell people about the details, the theme of the event this year?
So this year the hunt will be on April 13th. The deadline was March 30th. I'm sure if teams are still interested, we can sneak you in. We won't guarantee you one of these fabulous shirts. Mm-hmm. You know, every year they try to come up with a creative new shirt, and this year, like I mentioned, is recycle yourself. So it's got the recycling system symbol and everything. Mm-hmm. And the reason we always do this in April is because it is National Donor Life Month, mm-hmm. just to raise the awareness that much more. There's 4 to 6 people on a team. You all must fit in one vehicle.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's okay. I remember that. Yes. Yes.
So you all must fit in one vehicle, and you have 4 hours to complete a list of tasks. It's either doing something, taking pictures of it, recordings, gathering things. Mm-hmm. It's just a lot of fun, and you think 4 hours is a long time. It flies by rather quickly.
Terry, have you done this before? Have you done the scavenger hunt?
I have done it probably 9 of the 10 times. So this is actually the 10th year.
Awesome. Oh, congrats on that. That's noteworthy.
And we've actually had a couple teams that have done it every single year it's been offered. I got involved a couple years later. So this year we so far have 40 teams registered. We have 25 sponsors, and we're always looking for more sponsors or donations for raffles. So if anybody's interested, you can contact myself, contact Gift to Life. We have a webpage, we have a Facebook page. Mm-hmm. Webpage is Central Wisconsin Gift to Life spelled out .org. And you can search us up on Facebook, and that will give you a lead to where, if you're interested in making a donation, how to get it to us.
Connie, if somebody hasn't gotten the chance to do this before, but maybe they haven't even done a scavenger hunt before, I'm thinking about this with younger kids. I don't know how much they do these things and stuff anymore. So what should they know going into this? Is there any prep they should have or anything? You did mention the vehicle, so that is something to keep in mind.
A good night's sleep.
Yes, that's a good. Yes, definitely.
And a hearty breakfast.
Yes, both good notes, both good ideas.
Because you, like I mentioned, you think 4 hours is a long time, but it is quite a extensive list of activities. There are various points that are assigned to the activities. It could be from doing the chicken dance in front of KFC to finding a four-leaf clover or finding a painted rock or talking to someone about organ donation, you know, pumping gas for them, giving them a card or asking them, are you an organ donor and how would you like to learn more about it? So there's a lot of activities. It isn't just geared at adults. There's families, whole families that do it. Like I say, it's just a well-rounded group of people to get out there and enjoy the day. And hopefully Mother Nature will get winter out of her system so we can have a bright, sunny day. But we've done it in the snow. We've done it in the rain. It's unless you know, there's something horrific that happens, yeah, it will still be going on. Mm-hmm. And we like to give a big shout out to the Ridges, who for the last couple of years have donated their facility to us, mm-hmm, for the day, because we've tried it as the hunt has grown. We've kind of outgrown ourselves out of places, and they have given us their whole facility. So hopefully we can stay there for a while and not outgrow them either, because I don't know where else we would go.
Right, right. A big shout out to the Ridges. You hear us mention them with all kinds of nonprofits, and they do such good work over there, opening their doors for so many nonprofits, so many different businesses. Big thank you to them.
Yes, exactly. One thing we would also like to mention is that to date, Central Wisconsin's Gift of Life has donated over $120,000, wow, to the University of Wisconsin Organ and Tissue Donation and the Restore Hope Transplant House, which is located, mm-hmm, in Milton. And if you don't know what that is, it's a home away from home for transplant patients and their families while they're waiting to receive care. Hmm. They are in the midst of, it's all nonprofit, and then they are in the midst of putting on a big addition. So money coming their way is very helpful. Mm-hmm. And I've been told, I have never been there myself. I'd like to get down there sometime soon, but I have been told that it is quite the place to visit.
Yeah, I've heard similar things. And a big thank you to them and the work that they do over there. We're speaking with Terry Hummus from Central Wisconsin Gift of Life about their scavenger hunt. Terry mentioned that teams can still sign up for this. When it comes to those teams and people that are listening to this, Terry touched on this a little bit, but I really want to hit home on this. This is for everybody. Me and a couple of my friends have talked about doing this before, and I believe like a couple years back did it. I know that there's families. I think I have a neighbor just a couple floors down that him and his girls do this. There's lots of different groups that can be a part of this. And there's really no combination that can't work. Just got to fit in one vehicle.
Exactly. Mm. Exactly.
And you had a great point about, so I know we were joking around a little bit, but getting a good breakfast in before this is a really good idea. Because when the event is going on, as soon as that clock ticks, that's all you're going to be thinking about. You're going to probably forget to eat. You're probably going to forget to do those kind of things. So it's a good idea to get that in beforehand.
So I always, normally they take a group picture, and then it's like, okay, go. And it is just kind of, you know, you strategically park so you can get out of the parking lot first. Some teams will sit back and kind of strategize. Some people will just go. I'm on one of those teams that just go. Mm-hmm. We're getting to the car. Yes. We're going to get in. We're going to get going. And we're, you know, reading the list, yeah, and finding the things we can find first. And like I say, it is just a fun filled day. It's exhausting by the time you're done, but it's a good exhaustion.
Yeah, yeah. And it's for an amazingly good cause. All of this is for such an important and great cause. Kind of when it comes to the things, when it comes to the things on the list here, is that something that you and the organization come up with? Is that not you, but I mean the people in the organization come
there
up with?
There are two people who are privy to the list.
Nice.
And that would be Jill and Sarah. They come up with the list every year. Like you say, it is quite an extensive list. Where they get their ideas sometimes I don't know, but yeah. They're very creative, I will say, yeah, that. They are very creative.
And does this cost anything? Is there any charge for this?
So it is $25 per person, topping out at $250 for your team. So, mm-hmm, like say you could have 4 to 6 people, mm-hmm, on your team, as long as you all fit in the car. So if you have a big minivan, you can get all 6 of you in there and you're, you know, kind of coming ahead on the cost.
Yeah.
It is, like I say, just a fun-filled day.
And every penny of that, you know that you're doing something good with. You know,
right,
you know that 25, whatever you're spending, is going towards an amazing nonprofit, an amazing organization that you yourself may need one day, or you or a loved one may need one day.
And that's the fortunate or unfortunate thing is that you do not know when this situation may arise.
Mm-hmm.
You do not know if a family member will eventually become a donor.
Mm-hmm.
So it's always good to be prepared in those aspects, and to always kind of have that in the back of your head that I feel fine today, tomorrow might be a different story.
Yeah, yeah. You just, it's part of the reason why we encourage people to pay it forward, why we encourage people to be a part of events like this and do things like this. Yes, it's just good to do. It's just good. It feels good to put back in your community. It feels good to be a part of things like this. There's also that part of it, too, that you just never know when you might need these services.
So talking about needing the services, and this was just, I just saw this morning. UW Organ and Tissue Transplant just had their 20,000th organ recipient, and this individual is from Wisconsin Rapids. So we're not, you know, we're located here. A lot of the money goes back into the community here. We help anybody who's has questions, mm-hmm. looking for answers, or anyway try to help them, and like say it sounds like all their money is going to Madison. Mm. Well, that's where I think there's only one or two areas you can go for this.
Yeah.
That's where we've chosen to send our money, keep it in the state.
Yes.
That's where 90% of your or majority of your state people will be going is mm-hmm. to Madison.
Yeah, you guys did your homework on this, you can tell, and really important and appreciated. I also saw that article too, and I thought that was pretty cool, and especially on today to have you in and to see that. That's pretty cool. And a big thank you to them and the work that they're doing over there. So, Terry, did you have anything else you want to touch on?
So, one other thing is only 2 to 3% of people who are involved in death, accidents, the organs can be taken. But, you know, I just want to stress, tissue is a different situation. Mm. And that was my personal experience with tissue. And like, say, 24 years ago when this happened, you're like, what? You can still, there's a way you can help. Mm. But it was fantastic that we were able to do that. What other thing I want to, Wisconsin is very high per capita for organ donation or registering to be an organ donor at 60%+, where most states are only at 20 to 25%.
Wow. Yeah, that is a difference.
So, you know, we're, obviously the word is getting out. Obviously, people are realizing how important it is. And we just want to say, you know, keep it up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And big thank you to everybody who is a part of this, who has helped to donate or help, you know, spread the word about these events or any of the information about these events, too. That's another great way that you can do this. If maybe you are out of town or you're not able to be a part of this event, you can still help our friends at the Gift of Life by spreading this information, letting more and more people know about this, and encouraging people to check out the Facebook page, check out the website. Give our friends over there a call. Find out how you can help out and do more. Terry, as we're wrapping up, I want to make sure to cover anything you wanted to, if there was anything else you wanted to touch on.
So also, and this is the only one that's been known in the state, is we do have a legacy garden. So we currently have over 60 stones in our legacy garden. The garden is located in Legion Park along the river on 1st Street North. It's a labor of love for the family and friends of Coach Chris Stensberg, who was one of the founding members of the organization. He was a coach at Nakusa. His yeah. players at the time thought, we want to do something.
That's a great
and,
idea.
And this was an idea that came up. They raised over $6,000, and that helped get the garden going. And his wife, Wanda, continues to look over the garden, make sure everything's, you know, looking good. It is a neat place to go and experience yeah. and see. It's very well laid out. And you can really, I guess, feel
yes
the love there.
Absolutely. I was going to say it. You took the words right out of my mouth. You go over there and you feel a vibe. You feel that energy. Yes.
Another thing we have going on as a fundraiser will be Monday, July 8th. It's going to be Central Wisconsin Gift of Life at the ballpark. It's not too early to start thinking about that. Mm-hmm. And they will be playing the Wausau Woodchucks. The game starts at 6:35. There will be information about the organization, about organ donation. There will be giveaways, a 50-50 raffle. And that's always a big exciting thing for us.
Oh, yeah.
And the tickets that you buy, a portion of that will come back to the group. You included in your ticket is, you know, food, a hat, and your ticket. So you can't lose.
We're the home of the Wisconsin Rapids Rafters. We play every pitch, every win, every game of theirs, have ever since they got into town. And we love that organization. But as much as we love winning, we love hearing the games, we love baseball. This is what we love about the Rafters the most, is how they put back into their community with events like this.
Yes.
We'll be talking about that as we lead up to this one and then lead up to the season. Mm.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to the season.
Yeah.
And I love your jersey you have hanging here.
Yeah, it's really cool. That was nice of them to let them. They just gave us that. That was nice of them. When it comes to the details of the event, let's go over that one more time, if you don't mind, Terry.
Okay, so the event is August 13th, mm-hmm. or I'm sorry, April 13th. I'm already...
I know, I hear
through
you.
...the summer. So it'll be April 13th. Mm-hmm. If you want to get a team involved, get on the website right away and get your entry in,
mm-hmm.
Because it has, March 30th was the deadline, but we will let a few of you sneak in.
That's awful. Cool.
There's
That's
no,
nice.
I guess, guarantee that you'll get a shirt, but we will work our hardest to get you that.
Mm-hmm.
4 to 6 people on a team. You almost fit in one vehicle and be ready for a day of fun.
Yeah, and you can find out more by going to centralwisconsingiftoflife.org. That's all one run-on sentence, centralwisconsingiftoflife.org. Or you can find out their more on their Facebook page as well. I encourage you to type into your search bar, Central Wisconsin Gift of Life, and like their page. Keep up to date on the great work that they're doing over there. Because while this is a once-a-year event, all year long, the Central Wisconsin Gift of Life is doing incredible work in our state. And as the data that Terry was telling us earlier, that it's very impactful in this state in particular. So be a proud Wisconsinite. Get out there, find out more about this great organization, and spread the word about it. Terry, thank you again for the time.
Well, thank you, James, for letting us come in and speak to you about this.
We'll talk again real soon.
Yes.
And we'll have more Midday Magazine for you coming up right here on 97.5 FM, 1320 AM, WFHR. Locally Grown Radio.
Locally Grown Radio, WFHR. Matt and Air on Air.
So we're going to talk monarch butterflies and what we can do to help their habitat, because that's one of the biggest reasons why we're seeing our monarch population decrease. As Greg said, we know how much I loved Winged Thingies.
Winged Thingies! That's the name of our band. Calvin, me, Jane, Winged Thingies.
The Winged Thingies.
Matt and Air on Air, weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
What is dedication?
The thing that drives me every day as a dad is Dariano. We call him Day Day for short. Every day he's hungry for something, whether it's attention, affection, knowledge. And there's this huge responsibility in making sure that when he's no longer under my wing, that he's a good person. I want him to be able to sit back one day and go, we worked together, we did a good job.
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. The Wisconsin Elections Commission is expected to formally reject a recall effort against Assembly Speaker Robin Voss tonight. Commission staff issued a memo yesterday saying the recall group did not collect enough valid petition signatures. Recall organizers are already trying again. 4 major Wisconsin utilities are hiring workers to build renewable energy projects. Since they're tied to the Inflation Reduction Act, they promised to hire union workers. Union leaders are encouraging young workers to apply.
Somebody could start their apprenticeship career, complete their apprenticeship, and become a journey worker through the duration of a utility-scale solar project.
Kent Miller is president of the Wisconsin Laborers District Council. I'm Terry Bell. Civic Media News. Now here's what you need to know closer to home.
For WFHR and WIRI News, I'm Alyssa Kay. Tensions are still high in Port Edwards. Former Fire Chief Jason Warden spoke during the village board meeting on Tuesday, directing his comments towards absent village trustee Tierra Grundin.
I wish she was here tonight. I want to tell her, Trustee Grundin, please just knock it off. If you truly want to serve the people and do what's best for the village, you can start by telling the truth.
In his farewell address to each village trustee, Vice President Caleb McGregor started his comment to Trustee Grundin with this.
To Trustee Grundin, I've come to appreciate her ruthlessness and determination.
Resident Bob Warden asked for an apology from interim village administrator Dwayne Gao after his overreach last month during the resignations at the fire department.
So I'm still looking for the apology. Are you willing to offer one?
I gave my comment to the board, and I didn't see a board tell me to continue conversations with you, so that's where I stand.
Very good.
You can find the full meeting on the Village of Port Edwards, Wisconsin YouTube page. And that's what you need to know. I'm Melissa Kay, WFHR and WIRI News.
Matt and Air on Air.
So we're going to talk monarch butterflies and what we can do to help their habitat, because that's one of the biggest reasons why we're seeing our monarch population decrease. As Greg said, we know how much I loved Winged Thingas.
Winged Thingas! That's the name of our band. Calvin, me, Jane, Winged Thingas.
The Winged Thingas.
Matt and Air on Air. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
The Brewers with another win in Cincinnati. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Despite a steady rain, the Brewers had no problem scoring runs against the Reds. Top of the first, Bally Sports, Wisconsin.
And a fly ball to deep right. That'll do it. And then some for Christian Yelich. It's gone. A two-run blast for Yelly, and he stays hot.
Wow.
The Brewers went on to win 7-2 last night over the Reds. Today's game was rained out. NBA, the Bucks without Giannis and that calf muscle injury. They played against the Orlando Magic and beat them 117-99 at five-serve form. NFL, the Packers are headed to Brazil to play the Eagles in September. I spoke to Packers president Mark Murphy.
You know, the trip to London was phenomenal. The fan support, that was pretty impressive. And I'm really, really looking forward to seeing Brazil. I think we're the most popular team in Brazil, and really anxious to see the kind of support we'll get.
That's Packers president and CEO Mark Murphy. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Mostly cloudy today with scattered showers and a thunderstorm possible as well. High temperatures will flirt with 60 degrees and winds will start to ramp up this evening and into tomorrow too, dragging our high temperatures down for Friday into the low 50s. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot. Right now, it's 62 degrees.
A fourth-generation family-owned business is running strong thanks in part to Wisconsin cheese. Dufek Wood Products calls Denmark home and has been based in Northeast Wisconsin for close to 120 years. It's best known for manufacturing boxes, which are food-safe to age and ship wheels of cheese and can be reused. But another Dufek Wood product is getting attention thanks to the Guinness Book of World Records. Do you think it's the family's wine box? Boxes, organic garden mulch, or charcuterie boards? The answer coming up. Winter logging for summer building supplies is how the Dufek started. Manufacturing shifted by 1912 to other wood products, especially those cheese boxes. So did you guess which wood product is getting attention from the Guinness Book of World Records? It's the Dufek's charcuterie boards, with one recently named the largest ever, holding more than 760 pounds of gourmet cheese. That's one huge slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
Are you prepared for an emergency or disaster? Because it's not a matter of if, but when. Don't find yourself saying,
when the storm rolls in, my time to find a pet-friendly evacuation center will have run out.
The scorching heat wave will leave me powerless to cool my insulin.
I'll face a hurricane without meds. Now that's a tough pill to swallow.
Let's prepare so we all have a better story to tell. Get started at ready.gov/olderadults. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
From Wisconsin Rapids to Stevens Point, your news, talk, and sports is 97.5 FM, locally grown radio.
Welcome, everyone, to Midday Magazine for this April 11th, 2024. Have your host, James J. Maloff, here. We're joined right now by our good friend, UW Extension Ag Agent Matt Lippert, is with us. Matt, always good to see you.
Good to see you.
Thanks for being here. Appreciate the time. I want to get into a couple of things with you, whatever we have time for today, Matt. But one of the things that I came across was the wet start to the Wisconsin 24 growing season. And I got this article from WisconsinAgConnection.com. If you're curious to check out the whole article, WisconsinAgConnection.org. I know Pam was kind of talking your ear off a little bit, too, like I was, about this crazy weather season we've had and how this might affect our ag industry and our farmers out there.
So I think what was most unusual, what you're referring to, is our non-winter that we had.
Yeah.
Most of that, most people prefer a little less winter-like conditions.
Sure.
So we didn't have much snow to push. We didn't have extreme temperature. Sometimes we're worried about if there's no snow, that then it gets cold, and then we have the soil temperature gets really cold, and we can have some damage to plant crowns, plant roots.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're starting to know a little bit already that we didn't have much problem that way. I'm a little intrigued by your article, a wet beginning to the season, because, you know, we had a drought all of last year, one of the most severe we've had in probably like 20 years. Then we got into October, and depending where you were, we got like 8 to 11 inches of rain in the last 2 weeks of October,
mm-hmm.
which actually, you know, that sounds like too much too quick, but it was so dry that I think we captured a lot of that. But then there was a lot of concern through the winter without the snow, being previously dry, that it was dry. We were concerned about El Nino is supposed to be switching to La Nina.
Mm-hmm.
That's supposed to... actually, La Nina, does the maps I've seen, don't have as dramatic impacts on the upper Midwest as some other areas. But
yeah.
So actually, the little bit of... I wouldn't call it a wet spring yet. And as far as in southern Wisconsin, it's April, maybe even into March, they will do some planting of some crops. But we usually in this area, I was even talking to potato growers last week. You know, they're just starting. They're right on schedule. The people on the heavier soil have done some spring tillage that's way ahead of normal. So it wouldn't have been, we locally here would not call it a wet spring.
Sure. Yeah.
But now that it is starting to get to be closer to more legitimate time to do it, we're back to a more normal situation that there is moisture in some situations the field, and we can't just go out and do everything. But that's really normal. I wouldn't call this a wet spring.
Hmm. So with that being said, is there, with the season we've had, as consumers, are we going to be seeing some effects from this, or are we going to even notice?
At this point, I don't think there's anything that would be noticeable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
As I said, it's very early in the season.
Right, yeah, very hard to tell. I hate making you look in your crystal ball. I don't like doing that to you, but especially with this industry. But it is something that I think that we, a lot of people, I should say, when we're talking weather, like we all do from people with making small talk and that, one of the things that would come up was the concern of that. And it was actually kind of reassuring to me in just the sense of, oh, people are thinking of this. People are thinking of farmers. People are thinking of, now maybe they're thinking of it in part because of how it affects them personally. Mm-hmm. But at the very, you know, it's building on this empathy that not only you and I, but I think a lot of people in this state really try to create of getting people to understand what it is to be a farmer and having some empathy for that.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a little bit of that comes from this conversation that is good. But it's interesting to see that, you know, not that we know right now, of course, but how this weather affects, of course, the, you know, where things go.
One thing that is maybe a little weather related is people have noticed in the stores that beef has gotten mm-hmm. really high priced. We have the smallest cattle herd, so that's dairy and beef together, since I think it's like 1951 or 1953. And a little of that is how we've gotten more efficient, but it's noticeable. We have a really small, we don't have many mother beef cows making baby animals that are going to turn into meat in the grocery store.
Mm.
And that is, there's other factors, but one of the main ones is it has been dry on the areas The beef industry, you hear about feedlots where these animals get finished on a high-grain diet to get the marbling in their meat. But the typical beef production in the U.S. starts out on pastures with cows that live on the pastures all their lives. And they, in the spring, this time of year, they're dropping calves, and the calves nurse on their mothers, and then those calves stay out in the pasture, the range, whichever you want to call it. And then later in life, they get finished. Well, the range areas in the southern U.S., southern Midwest plains have been dry, and there's not been feed. So there's maybe other factors, but there's just not many cows around. And I think that would be a weather-related thing.
Matt, since we're talking cows a little bit here, and I don't have my youngest daughter around to talk cows because she loves cows. That's her favorite animal. I did want to get into a subject that Melissa and I in our morning show were talking about, and it comes to us actually from your neck of the woods in UW Extension, and encourage people to find more great articles at the University of Wisconsin's website, news.wisc.edu. The headline was, cows are getting sick in other states. What does it mean for Wisconsin? Can we touch on this topic for a little bit?
Sure.
For you, when you first hear this news, what was the first news? How did this hit you? How did this?
Well, there's a Texas Panhandle is actually an area where there's actually quite a few large dairies now, and it started there. The first news was we have these cows that are getting very sick, very few mortalities, but. Just suddenness of stopping eating, temperatures. And these are large dairies where they actually have monitors where they can tell the cow's stomach, her rumen, how it's functioning. And it's just like immediate cessation, you know, just nothing. And they didn't know what it was from. And it took probably over a week before they said, well, this is bird flu. And so it's called highly pathogenic avian bird influenza flu. And so we haven't had this in the cattle. We've had it when we've had some egg shortages in the last couple of years. This has been HPAI as well. So it has jumped species. And it's actually been kind of quiet, I'd say, the last week. So we found it in Texas. Then it was in Idaho and Kansas. Then it was in Michigan. And so I'd say still it would seem highly probable that this is going to spread because it's shown up in all these places. So it can spread cow to cow. It can spread from the wild birds, which are hard to control how that happens. It has a unique presentation in that it's not affecting our young animals. It's affecting older animals. It's not affecting early lactation, which is actually a high production, high stress period. Seems to be affecting later lactation. So it has a lot of, it presents, I don't know if they drink so little or whatever, but that they get dehydrated, but they present a thick, non-normal yellowish milk. So it's still evolving. It could be really major. The fact that we haven't had as much news and that we haven't had it reported here in Wisconsin yet, I think there's a little hope. It also is zoonotic, which means that we knew this before. People on chicken farms can carry, they can get bird flu. And it's usually... it's not like a COVID outbreak yet, of course, because this thing is mutating. But people can get like pink eye sort of effect from it. And it's usually people that are directly working with the animals. So you cook meat, we pasteurize milk. You should not be too alarmed that oh, if I drink milk from cows from Texas that I'm going to get bird flu. You shouldn't be thinking that way because it's pasteurized and you cook your meat. So we're not too concerned about that at this point. But if it does continue to spread, we could have more production loss, and you'd be seeing that in the store if we have less milk.
From the article and from Keith Polson, University of Wisconsin medicine expert in zoonotic disease and director of the Wisconsin Veterinary Diagnostics Laboratory, there are a couple of things that they wanted to stress from this article: that pasteurized milk and cooked meat, as Matt was saying, and all products are safe, and there is no reason to believe there is any concern for dairy products. The disease seems to be spreading from bird to cow, not cow to cow, though investigations are underway to determine how the disease was spread to the Michigan dairy. And at this time, the disease is not considered a high risk for public health. So it is important to note those things. We can do two things at once, though. I think that it's important to be able to chew gum and walk at the same time. It's important to know about this stuff. Nobody's trying to scare people, though. We're not trying to freak anybody
you know,
out or anything.
People, rightly so. I mean, people get scared.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So even if I tell them, don't worry, the milk is pasteurized, you cook your meat, there's thousands of people, millions of people. Mm. Some people are going to be alarmed, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So
we do a good job of freaking ourselves out. We don't always need the scientists to do it for us and everything. Yeah. That's a good point. But I do think, again, coming back to this, where while we don't have concerns necessarily for these things as far as consumers go, it is another reminder of how the diligent work that is done behind the scenes and stuff before we even see this food on our plate, and how much work goes into this with the ag industry and the scientists and everybody involved in the Food and Safety Administration to try to make sure that the products, once it lands on your plate, it is safe.
Well, so background research, this was very, I suppose it's 3 weeks ago now, very alarming. These cows are getting really sick, and it seems to be spreading. So, and we don't know what it is. So, you know, there was a lot of the state veterinarian departments in multiple states figuring out that this was this HPAI that we've mainly seen in poultry, had adapted to affect cattle. Mm. So there's a lot of work already that's been done on this. But our state veterinarian departments are incredible in the work that they do.
Yeah, it really is impressive. We're speaking with Matt Lippert, agricultural agent with UW Extension Madison. And Matt, one of the things, and I want to send a shout out actually to our Wisconsin Rapid City Times as well, and some great reporting done by Gene and Mike and about our own little neck of the woods here. There's this wonderful place for connecting food and those who grow it. That is the mission statement of the new Food Plus Farm Exploration Center, located right off of I-39 in Plover. I wanted to talk about that facility a little bit and what it is, what it gives to the community, and the future of what it could bring as far as maybe sparking young minds to get into this industry, learning more about it, and that, again, coming back to the empathy thing, at the very least, creating more of a bridge of that. It sounds like a great facility.
It is an awesome facility. Hmm. I've been there once. I would recommend everyone should. I mean, it's just over in Plover, south side of Plover. It's brand new. It's state of the art. I've seen some other versions of this. So there was a lot of groups that came together to sponsor this. And you actually, I'm intrigued that you picked that one up. Maybe the newspaper wrote about that a little bit. But there's a concern about. Agriculture is really a prevalent industry in the central Wisconsin area, and a lot of people don't realize that. What I physically do is not. I don't get my hands dirty. I don't handle a crop or an animal, but I do things that are serving agriculture. It could be laboratory work. It could be accounting functions. It could be IT, because ag is getting more sophisticated. So there's a concern in ag that we don't have enough people realizing as they're choosing, because we know there's not as many young children. There's more people. The pyramid is the wrong way. That my age is leaving the workforce, and there's not as many people to replace it. So there's a concern about, will we have people that realize the great opportunities there are in agriculture? So I think that's one of the reasons to create this facility, is there's a lot of things for families, preschool, elementary school. There's, since it's new, there's just The parking lot every day has got lots of buses from elementary schools. But there's things for every age group. It's very interactive, and it does a great job of educating about protecting the earth, conservation, water, practices that we use, areas that we're working on, managing fertile. I've seen others like this. There's one in the Fair Oaks area between Indianapolis and Chicago that's really famous for teaching people about dairy production and hog production. And you can go watch a cow calve, a live birth there. Mm-hmm. This one is dedicated a little more to our potato and vegetable production area mm-hmm. in the irrigated Central Sands. But they have a great deal of information on when they water, the kind of sprinkler heads they use. I'm just touching on it. It's really a neat place, and I think everybody would find it interesting to see.
Yeah, there's a lot of detail that went into this, and so that you're going in and you're not just seeing a tractor. You're seeing, like Matt said, some of the details of that. You're getting a little bit more of the nuts and bolts of the conversation with this, and I really think that part is not the detail is going to help only more it stay in their hearts and their heads. This information mm-hmm. for these kids, along with possibly sparking an interest in the field. I also appreciate you touching on the other aspects of ag. That I personally don't think about all the time either, and I know some listeners might not either, about the accounting and some of these other things that just doesn't get covered very often. So I appreciate you touching on that. With something like this, Matt, I imagine that it's a great thing to have, of course, and we're happy for it for all the reasons we've just said. Does it help at all when you've spent your life and dedicated so much to this industry to see things like this, to see efforts like this to help the industry? I imagine it goes some ways for you. It's not easy for our ag industry these days. And I imagine that it's got to be at least some gift or a good feeling to see such work being put into a project like this.
I think it's very nicely done. There's a concern sometimes in schools that teachers are probably starved for media, and so they want to teach about food production or ag, and they get a hold of some alarmist material that implies that the main agricultural production system in the country is, I don't know, inhumane or doesn't respect workers or doesn't respect the environment. And it's a lot more nuanced than that, And so I think this does a nice job of talking about alternatives. It talks about why you might want to use an organic food or an organic production system and what it does. On the other hand, it talks about how conventional systems, for many reasons, have to also be respectful of the environment. Mm-hmm. So it's really nicely done. And I think it's whenever you put a lot of effort into education, you want to see it be balanced.
Yeah.
And I think it does that pretty well.
One of the other things that I noticed about this and reading in it was something that you mentioned something about what I was saying before about the importance of this, and you touched on that concern as well. And certainly they do a nice job in the article talking about that, but I picked that up in going to school out here, like working and working alongside kids that come from an ag family and some of the concern there from their parents or from them themselves about their brother and sister or somebody continuing that work, continuing to stay in that field. I've seen that a lot. And one thing I've seen a lot of that is not only people that have questioned whether or not they want to go into that field and then they ended up going into the field, but also people that have come back to the field. People have gone off and gone to school, come back to town, and this is, you know what, they found out, they read about other industries, but this is the one that they want to be a part of. So it is interesting to see with that. And then there is the other part, and Matt, you and I have touched on this a bit before, and you really opened my eyes to this, along with Rachel Whitehair, who used to work there as well, about the tech and ag industry and how hand-in-hand those are and how much that's enhancing and making it that much better going forward for future generations. I just saw, doing some homework for our conversation here, I saw an article on new scarecrows, lasers that aim to deter wild birds. Like, we're even updated the scarecrow, Matt. Like, we don't even have traditional scarecrows anymore. Like, it's pretty...
A little laser.
Yeah, yeah. It's pretty interesting. It's pretty unique to see where this is going. I imagine that that's got to be enticing to the young generation. I think that that's got to be incentivize is the wrong word, but maybe give them even more encouragement of getting into this field. And it's kind of wild to see, I imagine, especially for you, somebody who's grown up in this industry.
Well, so a lot of people have left agriculture over the years out of concern of working outdoors, too many hours, too little pay, too much risk. And they watch their parents. So these are all real things. And I'm not saying that it's just a plush, easy life anymore. Yeah. But there's been a lot of things to address those. Agriculture is essential. So we have to make it manageable for the people that work in it. You're talking about technology. I just had earlier this week on Tuesday, I had a program about robotic milking of cows.
Yeah.
So that is, we had 150 people there. And typically, and we didn't feed them a free meal. And usually in ag, because Extension doesn't feed free meals, usually some cooperative or something has a spring day and they feed people and they get a lot of people. But this, we didn't do any of that. We had 150 people at this farm. It was up near Abbotsford. And it's about robotics. So dairy producers have a lot of interest in robotic milking. So if you know, the Census of Agriculture recently came out, and most of the cows and most of the milk in the country these days are produced on farms over 2,000 cows, which we have very few of those around here, and we think that's this is a big dairy area. But these really big farms have a lot of cows, and so when you account for where the milk comes from, it comes from those big farms. So that's changed in agriculture a lot. But and because of this cows and large farms, it's an incredible amount of the milk that is the people milking the cows are Hispanic.
Mm.
And we hear all the fraught discussion about people crossing the border that tend to be Hispanic, Spanish-speaking people. And agriculture, dairy farmers need those workers, and you'll hear, well, the native white population doesn't want to milk cows.
Mm-hmm.
Hispanics don't necessarily want to milk cows. So we're finding that robots are becoming a really important alternative. And cows can like this too, because instead of going to the parlor to get milked when the farmer says twice or three times a day in a robotic milking system, the cow decides if she wants to get milked five times a day or twice a day.
Wow.
And the computer behind the robot, if this cow wants to go more often than the computer thinks it should, she's wasting the time of the computer, the gate is closed. The cow is not allowed to enter. But if she's a heavy producer at the time of her lactation, when it's very legitimate that she should want to get milk five times a day, it opens up the door and welcome. These are a pretty neat piece of equipment to see how an arm comes under the udder, and it's either like lasers or camera is identifying where the attachment should be made.
Crazy. That's amazing.
Yeah. So there's a lot of interest in these. They're quite expensive, but if you're hiring labor, it's a trade-off.
Right.
So they're actually popular amongst large dairies that are putting in dozens of these things, or smaller family-sized dairies that just want one or two of them.
Yeah. Matt, I look forward to talking again real soon and getting more into this and talking some more about these kind of subjects. Always appreciate the time and the insight from you, Matt. Thank you so much for it. We'll talk again real soon.
Very good.
Well, the more Midday Magazine for you coming up on WFHR, locally grown radio.
You're listening to Locally Grown Radio, WFHR.
Locally Grown Radio, from Vesper to Plover, we are your home for news, talk, and sports. 97.5 FM and WFHR, 1320 AM.
Don't you wish your life came with a warning app?
Stop. That dog does not want to be petted.
A heads up before something bad happens.
You should not send that text.
Uh-oh. Life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. With early diagnosis and a few healthy changes, you can reverse prediabetes and prevent or delay type 2 diabetes. To learn your risk, take the one-minute test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its prediabetes awareness partners.
This is your hometown radio, Refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network. This is Locally Grown Radio, WFHR 1320 AM, W248DE Wisconsin Rapids, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.